The Christian faith is not boring.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk talking about his new book, Echo, Unbroken Truth Worth Repeating Again.
The Christian faith is so stunning and radical that it's amazing to me that we have our children sitting in pews and classrooms yawning and bored with it. And all I could do is say that we've got to figure out a way to repeat this thing, to echo it again, and really reawaken our imaginations to its truth.
Learn more about Echo by Pastor Jonathan Fisk at issuesetc.org.
In time, you will know what it's like to lose. To feel so desperately that you're right, yet to fail all the same. Dread it. Run from it. Destiny still arrives.
Evacuate the city. Engage all defenses. And get this man a shield.
That is a trailer to the much-awaited movie Avengers Infinity War Part 1. Had an opportunity to see that while visiting family down south last weekend. I'd watched all the movies up to that point with the exception of just one or two. It was long. It was very memorable. And I will tell you in advance, at the end, people were crying behind me. And for the last 5 minutes of the movie, there were people in the theater, ordinary grown-up human beings crying out, oh no, not this can't be happening. And, well, one group even got up and left at the end and said, worst ending ever. Not everyone agrees with that assessment, of course. We're going to be reviewing the movie Avengers Infinity War. Pastor Ted Geese will join us here in the first half hour. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Friday afternoon, May the 4th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After our review of Avengers Infinity War, Matthew Cochran joins us. He's authored a column for The Federalist titled How Schools Quietly Indoctrinate Your Kids on Abortion and Transgenderism. We'll spend some time with Pastor Chris Roseborough, our feature this week in Pop American Christianity Today, Narsegeting the Garden of Gethsemane. There's exegesis, which is interpreting a passage of Scripture. There's eisegesis, which is reading your own interpretation into a passage of Scripture. And then Pastor Roseborough has coined the term narsegesis, in which you read yourself into a passage of Scripture. We'll see how that's done by a few prominent evangelicals with respect to the Garden of Gethsemane when we have This Week in Pop American Christianity. Then we're going to play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. We got four soundbites lined up for you. All you'll need to do is listen to them, and you can do so in advance at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, where you can also vote. We've left space there for you to do it. You can wait until we play and give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email with your vote, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. In the last half hour, we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. In the meantime, it's time to review the movie Avengers Infinity War, Part 1. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
Okay, so I'm going to do this without trying to elicit any big spoiler, although I can't guarantee that in the course of our conversation. When I went to see the film this last weekend, at the end of the movie, for about the last 5 minutes, people were crying out, no, no, this can't be. These are people in the theater. In all sincerity. And then at the very end, I could hear behind me gentle weeping at the end of the film. Did you shed tears at the end of Avengers Infinity War Part 1?
Listen, I shouldn't laugh. I apologize for anybody who did cry at the end of the movie. I did not. Did you cry at the end of the movie?
No.
No, okay. So we've established that neither of us cried at the end of the movie. I did cry at the end of the movie, Paul, Apostle of Christ, but, you know, for different reasons. So, but I guess this shows people just how much people are invested in these characters. If they end up openly weeping at the, or softly sobbing at the end of the movie, I think that tells you a lot. It reminds me of what is it, Augustine talking about how he felt, you know, kind of ashamed almost about crying for Dido when he was, you know, reading a piece of fiction. And you know, this happens. People can get caught up in the moment, that's for sure.
All right. The other question I had with respect to the end was, if you sat through 20 minutes of credits, as has been promised in all of the Marvel movies and other movies as well, you got at the very, very end a kind of a little continuation of the end, but you also got the little, what do they call those, Easter eggs that was laid right there. You see the screen of a beeper.
Yes.
And on the screen appears a symbol. I don't think we're going to give anything away since they're already promoing this nationwide. There's a symbol there. What do you know what it stands for and what it means for the next step in these films?
Yeah, it's another, you get Sam Jackson there and he's, you know, they cut him off mid-sentence. And then it's, is this like Captain Marvel? I think that's the little symbol, is the Captain Marvel symbol. If I'm Captain Marvel, I think.
Yes.
Yes. That like, I for a second there, I saw it and I was like, hey, wait a minute. And then it sunk in. But yeah, that was the thing. So maybe some people had to Google it afterwards or not. I don't know. But that's what they're teasing. There's this new character that they're going to have another, I think in 2019, the Captain Marvel movie is coming out.
All right. So that's obviously connected to the next step of this. This is a part one. There's no way this could be a conclude. If well, it could be a concluding part of a series of films. It's just a very sad one. But there's yeah. a part one here. This, I think, is the first time a villain in a Marvel film has been able to carry out his diabolical plan.
Yeah, he doesn't get thwarted. Like he gets stymied along the way a little bit here and there. But he does finish off his plan. But you know, of course, they did shoot a bunch more stuff. Like so that they're actually like I guess probably Monday they're going to be starting to work on the next part of this because they were shooting a lot of things concurrently. But the Russo brothers, the two guys who were the directors of the film, have it set up in such a way that yes, the villain wins. So you have like kind of like the dark cliffhanger, kind of like an Empire Strikes Back kind of ending where it's like, ooh, everything has gone very bad. So now they have to kind of, they've painted themselves into a corner, these superheroes, and now they got to get their way out.
So here's the spoiler alert for anyone who does not want to have this one spoiled. I wouldn't blame you. So from this point on, we might actually either intentionally or unintentionally give some of this plot away.
Yeah, we got to get into some details. Yeah.
Okay. So where are we in this film, Infinity War? And it really is kind of the culmination of a bunch of different things all coming together. And I was surprised they managed to do it fairly well.
Yeah, they did a really good job, I thought, all things considered. I mean, when you have that many characters you need to interweave into the story, you know, you could really, this could be incomprehensible, but they did a very good job. And one of the things that they had to do was they had all of these storylines that kind of are not connected to each other exactly. Like, you're kind of watching all of it as a viewer, but like the Guardians of the Galaxy people have never met the Avengers people. And so there's these kind of first time meetups that they have to do where they're, you know, running into each other for the first time. They have to decide if they're on the same team. They have to decide if they have the same goals. They have all little bits of pieces of information that they need to share with each other. So I thought that they did all of that very well. And they also did a good job of pairing up certain Avengers with certain other people in the different like plot lines. Like taking Thor and putting him with the Guardians of the Galaxy was fun, particularly because they made that Thor Ragnarok movie, which kind of bridged Thor into a more comedic kind of, had more comedy, so it kind of fit with the Guardians of the Galaxy. And then like Doctor Strange paired up with Tony Stark as Iron Man, you know, the man of science, and then the man of magical mystery or whatever, kind of together. So doing some of those things I thought was, you know, pretty clever the way they did it. They got a lot of mileage out of that, and you're bringing a lot of your own personal knowledge about the movies into the film itself when you sit down.
This villain, Thanos, where have we seen him before, and what is his goal in the course of this movie?
The first time you see him, I think, is at the end of the first Avengers film from 2012. And he's kind of like the puppet master. He's like, you find out that he's the guy in behind Loki, Thor's adopted brother, who's the, you know, god of mischief, god in quotation marks. So you get, he's the guy in behind all that. And then you find out more about him in Guardians of the Galaxy, the first of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies in 2014. And you find that he's kind of in behind Ronan, the Destroyer of Worlds, or whatever he is. And the whole idea is that he's trying to gather together these six Infinity Stones into a gauntlet so he could like wield all of them at once and be the most powerful person in the universe, essentially. So this is his goal, is to have all of that power and then to use it how he likes.
There is an unexpected, perhaps unintended message here that essentially Thanos considers himself a humanitarian. He considers himself a savior of sorts. He's trying to save the universe from itself by culling the population because he doesn't believe that the universe is sustainable with that many people in it. And I'm thinking to myself watching this, wow, they are portraying in a lot of ways kind of the environmental movement, the anti-birth movement, the anti-population movement in a pretty dark light.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, like in some ways he would be pretty comfortable sitting on a UN panel on overpopulation or something, you know, which is very odd. I guess the other thing that's about it that's I think is interesting is that like he's clearly the villain. So they have to like beat him, try to stop him from doing this thing where he would, with the snap of a finger, like snap of his fingers, wipe out half the population of the universe. They have to stop him from doing it. So he's definitely cast as a villain, but then they take him and they write him in such a way. And Josh Brolin, who plays Thanos, does such a good job acting that they really try to present him also as somebody who has very noble qualities. So in a way, it's kind of like hedging your bets. Like I've been thinking about a little bit more, even from when I wrote the review, is that in kind of a postmodern relativistic kind of approach to things, there are going to be people who will sit down in the theater and they will end up rooting for Thanos because Thanos has end goals the same as they have. You know, they're gonna see what Thanos has suggested to do and they're gonna say, well, that's not bad. And that creates like some probably some moral ambiguity for some viewers. I mean, for people who have a decidedly pro-life point of view on things, they're going to certainly see Thanos as a villain. And then, of course, this whole idea of overpopulation is actually, it's something we talked about a while ago when we talked about the movie Inferno by Ron Howard with Tom Hanks in it. I don't know if you remember us talking about it, but that's part of that story too, this idea of like literally half of the population being wiped out. And in that film, it was half the population is wiped out and it turns it into like a kind of a hell on earth. But for this film, when Thanos envisions wiping out half the population, he doesn't see it as a hell on earth. He sees it as the beginning of a new day. Like when suddenly everybody has a full belly and they've got, you know, food enough and nobody starves. And so he's got like these kind of noble intentions. But the problem is that this idea that kind of started out with this Anglican Church of England guy, Robert Malthus, who's a clergyman. He wrote a thing called an essay on the principles of population in 1798. And people have been kind of like banking on that all along. In the 60s, that came out again. And it was this kind of like fear-mongering thing amongst your, you know, baby boomer types when they were young. So here we see it again in this movie. So it's an interesting thing. And it's also interesting because it's bunk. It's like, it doesn't act. It's not, it's a fake, it's a boogeyman premise. I mean, if he snaps his fingers and half the population is gone, you could have the population double in 30 years. He's going to have to snap his fingers again in 30 years and he's going to have to do it over and over and over again. So anyways, it is an interesting thing. And I think some people with relativistic kind of points of view on things might even find a hero in Thanos, which because of the way he's portrayed even, which is very odd. He'd be like a quote-unquote anti-hero or something, I suppose.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We're reviewing the movie Avengers Infinity War Part 1 on this Friday afternoon. He taught a course at Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, a Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. When we come back, the villain in this movie believes that he's actually showing mercy in his heinous acts. We'll find out what Pastor Ted Geese thinks about that after this.
And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Would you like to help a college or seminary student attend the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference? You can purchase a conference scholarship for a contribution of $120 to Issues Etc. You can donate online at issuesetc.org/scholarship, or you can make your $120 check payable to Issues Etc., write scholarship in the memo line, and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC RUCAM. But no matter how you say it, Ad Crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts and is pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. We're reviewing the movie Avengers Infinity War Part 1. Ted, one of the fascinating things that I found in the character of Thanos, the villain here in this movie, is that he actually, in spite of all of the pain he is inflicting on people and plans to, believes he is actually showing them mercy.
The thing about really complex villains is that the villain has to be, and this, you hear this when people talk about playing villains, like as actors, the villain has to be the hero of their own story. Like they have to think that the thing that they're doing is actually a good thing. They have to have that as an underpinning for their motives. And one of the things that kind of comes up over and over again with these Marvel Cinematic Universe movies is that the complaint is that the villains are too shallow, too two-dimensional. They don't have enough of a real role in the movie. They're just there to show the heroes knocking down a villain and being heroic. So maybe there's a method to that madness, and what you get is all of these kind of flat, shallow, less impressive villains, so that when compared to this one, then you've got like a real character that people will remember.
Again, we're going to try and be careful not to give it away, but I think we have to talk about some of this. The heroes in this film, there are a lot of them, but they are also not appearing at their best. They don't have these kind of decisive, yay, we won, and now everything's going to be okay moments, even through the course of the film before its very dark ending.
Yeah, they're constantly put into some serious ethical dilemma moments. And what you get is, actually, this is one of the things that's kind of interesting, too, is that Thanos often presents these scenarios where they have to kill somebody that they love to try to... He's constantly setting this up. It's like, are you willing to kill somebody that you love? So he sets this up over and over again. Or are you willing to sacrifice somebody? You know, because I like Tony Stark and Doctor Strange don't love each other. But there are cases where they do love each other, but they're always put in these kind of situations. And he's constantly doing that. And they're not all making the same kind of decisions. This is like the trolley car dilemma, where it's like, do you kill this one person to save these people? And sometimes they're caught in these ethical dilemmas where they have to, like, do you do that because it's expedient and it's the fastest way to try to solve the problem? Or do you try to come up with a way to solve the problem that lets the certain individuals live? And they're kind of put in those situations there, and they're not always making the right decisions about things. Like, even like Quill, as like the Star-Lord, you know, Chris Pratt's character, you know, like, if he just had like a little more patience, like, there's this, I think, you know, the moment I'm talking about, it's like, there are these moments where they fall down on their virtues. They don't have the virtues that they need to get the job done in some cases. And they further complicate the plot. And that's what, you know, is some of the kind of interesting things that you find in the movie.
Now, I'm wondering what your thoughts are here. The way that a lot of those scenarios unfold in the course of Infinity War are based upon the fact that the villain Thanos can manipulate time, space, reality. And I'm wondering if that is the deus ex machina that we're awaiting in the second part of this film when it comes out.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is that these stones, right? Like the stones, they do different things. So there is a stone that is controls reality. There's one that controls time. So, you know, probably what's going to happen if they kind of follow what's come before that, they'll likely, you know, find a way to flip the clock back a day. Right, so they'll have a chance to kind of redo. So that there's going to be, maybe potentially they could have kind of a Groundhog Day kind of thing. These are the kinds of things where you could find it. Like I don't know if you ever came across the comic books years ago or anything, but I have an idea of what they're going to do, because if they follow the comic book, they're going to do a certain thing. And there's a character who's a kind of a side character at the moment, who is going to have a very big shining moment in it if they do the thing that they likely will do. And they've been setting it up in they would be taking advantage of things that have been set up in previous movies if they do that thing. Is that cryptic enough for you? I don't know. Can I just say it? The comic book has been around for a long time. So there's the character of Nebula. Nebula is the sister of Gamora. These are both the adopted children of Thanos. And for different reasons, they hate Thanos. And Nebula's very bitter character. And slowly along the way, she's been moving from being a villain to being less of a villain. And Gamora, her sister, is trying to convince her that love is okay, and that being part of something is okay. And you don't have to be this bitter and like... So what happens in the comic books, there's a point at which she gets the gauntlet, and then she gets to decide what happens, and she brings back people. She reverses things. So they could go that way. And of course, her own sister, again, these are just all spoilers. Her own sister dies. Like, Thanos has to like sacrifice Gamora in order to get the Soul Stone. So she would, if they follow this pattern, she would be bringing her sister back as well. So that's the kind of thing that I'm expecting in the next film when they finally get around to it.
Two more questions for you. You say that the villain does not view life as cheap. In fact, there's a moment there in the film where he does what he has been requiring everyone else to do. he sacrifices someone he loves, or as close as he gets to love, in order to reach what he thinks is his higher goal. So he pays a price himself. But you do say he views life as expendable.
Well, yeah, this is the whole ends justify the means kind of thing. So it gets into the ethical question of, is something right or wrong in the doing of it? Or is it only right or wrong in the consequences of what transpires? So if you do something that's bad that ends up being a good thing in the end, you have to accept the fact that you had to do the bad thing to get to the good thing. Instead of maybe you do the bad thing, it comes to a good response, but you still have to feel bad about the thing you did. This is the kind of thing for him. So he sees how life has to be expended in order to, in his mind, bring something good out of it. So this is where he's at as a character. So it's hard for him to sacrifice his daughter. In fact, that moment is quite a moment, because as soon as she's with him, and as soon as she realizes that he has to give up the one thing that he loves the most, and she's like, well, you don't love anything, so we're safe. And then it turns out, no, he actually does love her, Gamora. And you know, like, and you don't often see film villains cry, but there are a couple moments in the film where they have Thanos actually shedding tears over the death of his daughter. And the other kind of interesting thing with that is that when he first, you don't know it, but he's gotten the Reality Stone, and he's confronted Star-Lord Peter Quill, who loves Gamora, and said, you know, like, and she has already had a conversation with him. If I get caught by Thanos, then you have to kill me. So he's put into this predicament of whether he's going to do it or not. And he does pull the trigger on Gamora. And then it turns out that the whole thing was actually just a ruse or whatever. It's like, it was a bending and warping of reality. But he, like, Thanos showed that he had affinity towards, or he admired or liked Peter Quill, because Star-Lord, because he was willing to do that, which is peculiar. But I guess maybe he knew that he himself might at some point have to do, to sacrifice somebody that he loved. In fact, when you snap your fingers and randomly half of everybody disappears, could randomly you disappear? I don't know. Like, I don't, that's not something that they dealt with in the movie, but it's, you know, this is what the film kind of starts to dig into.
Okay, so finally, and this is kind of the ultimate spoiler, so if you don't want to know, then you can stop here and not lose anything. Did you do the math, Pastor Geese? Who's left to go into the next movie?
Interestingly, the original Avengers.
Who's that?
Well, you got, like, now I have to make sure I get these all right. So you got the Incredible Hulk, who during the film, he kind of is the Incredible Hulk at the beginning, but then Dr. Banner is like, can't get the Incredible Hulk to come out because the Incredible Hulk is afraid. So he has something he's got to overcome for the next film. So you got the Incredible Hulk, you have Captain America, you have Iron Man, who is very sad because of a protege dying. You have also Thor, who feels as though he has nothing left to lose. And you have Scarlett Johansson, I guess, as Black Widow. And then, and then off screen, Hawkeye wasn't even on in the movie. So I'm assuming that he'll probably show up in the next film. But those guys are the core group of the original Avengers. They're all there. So when I think about this, and if I'm, you know, Marvel Studios and Disney, guys like Robert Downey Jr. and guys like that, maybe they want, they've been doing these characters for a long time. Maybe they want to have their contracts end or whatever. So what you could do is you could have a scenario where in the last film, the only ones that really die and are gone are those original Avengers. Like, they have to actually sacrifice themselves. And then the story carries on with the second tier people moving into the first tier. Like, that would be a potential kind of way of doing it, so that the original Avengers have to solve the problem and save everything, but in the act of doing it, they sacrifice themselves. I'm going to guess that that's going to be something that they may go down that road.
Finally, then, another reaction that I heard when the movie was over, and these people seemed to really enjoy the film, They looked to me like kind of the target audience. They were sitting next to me in the theater, but they didn't even stick around to see the little Easter egg at the end, which practically everyone else did. When the film was over and it started to roll the credits, they stood up and the one fellow said, I think quoting a Simpsons character, "Worst ending ever," and very dramatically walked out. What was your final reaction to the film?
I didn't mind the ending. I didn't think it was that bad. I thought that it was good. It's a good cliffhanger. Like, I guess earlier that day, I saw it on Sunday, and I was at church, and like there was a mom and a little girl who had seen the movie, and we were talking, and I said, I don't want to know anything about it. But the mom said, I didn't know what was going on. like I just didn't know. But the little girl had seen all the movies and had really enjoyed them all. So she said, well, did you see all of the movies? And I said, yes. And she says, well, you're going to really like it. But the mother was like, I don't know what's going on. So I'm going to guess that these guys that you were sitting next to did actually know what was going on. And, you know, there's always going to be somebody who's a crank about stuff. Like, I don't know. But I think that it's kind of an amazing thing that they pulled off in that, you know, it was a big task that had to pay off. Like, they've been setting things up for like the better part of a decade. So they have to like hit the right notes. They have to pay things off. They have to make sure that it advances the story. And the guy, like these Russo brothers, they're the guys that did Captain America, Winter Soldier, and the Civil War movie, right? So Winter Soldier ends with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., all of that S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff, like all being just completely destroyed. And Captain America ends with your two main guys, Iron Man and Captain America, both at odds with each other. So these guys have they make good Marvel movies, but they also like to make sure that there's a hard twist in there in order to like shake it up so that it's not just the same over and over again, right? Like, if people just keep getting chocolate ice cream, eventually they'll not like chocolate ice cream anymore. So they have to throw some pistachio in there for people, I guess. I don't know. But that's kind of my take on it, is that I think people will, and some people are just going to have that real emotional reaction, I guess. It may be irrational, probably irrational emotional reaction, but that's certainly something to think about.
You can read Pastor Ted Geese's review of Avengers Infinity War Part 1 at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course at Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
You can help Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all by opening a loan with the Lutheran Federal Credit Union or by using your Lutheran Federal Credit Union credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases. During May, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give the same amount of money to Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org, LutheranFCU.org. On the other side of the break, we're going to talk about the indoctrination of children into the sexual revolution with Matthew Cochran, who's written recently for The Federalist, how schools quietly indoctrinate your kids on abortion and transgenderism.
Children are a human right. Children are a lifestyle choice. Children are angels. Children are a nuisance. There are not enough children to sustain the economy. There are too many children to sustain the planet. Need some clarity amidst all the shouting? Check out the May issue of the Lutheran Witness magazine. Hear from moms and dads, pastors and teachers about what it really means to receive and value the gift of children in our lives. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
The substitute organist service has been a great blessing for our worship life here at Christ the King Lutheran in Riverview, Florida.
Pastor Kevin Yoakum on the substitute organist service.
Now our organ plays rich liturgical music every single Sunday, and it's very affordable. You pick the hymns, you pick the liturgies. It's very simple. Just know when to push play.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com. churchmusicsolutions.com.
Looking for a faithful Lutheran church in East Central Oklahoma? Welcome to Trinity Okmulgee, a friendly and faithful LCMS congregation only 40 miles south of Tulsa. Hi, this is Pastor Chris Teeves. Check us out at trinityokmulgee.org. That's Trinity, O-K-M-U-L-G-E-E, all one word, .org. See you soon at Trinity Okmulgee, Oklahoma.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth, Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Redeemer Lutheran, Mandeville, Louisiana. Our Savior Lutheran, Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Emmanuel Lutheran, Louisville, Nebraska. Grace Lutheran, Warminster, Pennsylvania. Trinity Lutheran, Valonia, Indiana. Emmanuel Lutheran, Pensacola, Florida, St. Athanasius Lutheran, Vienna, Virginia, and Emmaus Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.